Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Well, Wayne Grudem rocked the evangelical world this past week on July 28th, to be more specific. He released an op-ed or opinion piece out at townhall.com. And the title of it was this. It said, "Why Voting for Donald Trump is a Morally Good Choice." Why voting for Donald Trump is a morally good choice. Now, that title caught a lot of people's attention, and many people in the evangelical world are very familiar and think highly of Wayne Grudem. He's a very well-respected theologian. He's written a number of books. He's written a book on politics, of a pretty thorough book on politics and so forth that's been out for years. I had him on the broadcast previously to talk about that. I was actually working behind the scenes to have Dr. Grudem back on the broadcast to talk about another book that he had come out about, talking about grace. And I had just heard back from the publicist the other day that he wasn't going to be able to make it to come on the program right now. His schedule was really jam-packed. Well, I imagine that's even more so the case after he wrote this article, Why Voting for Donald Trump is a Morally Good Choice. Since he wrote this article, there have been a number of rebuttal articles that have been written by a number of fairly prominent evangelicals as well. In most cases, many of those evangelical leaders have come out against what Wayne Grudem has said in this article, at least in the ones that I have read. They just bring out the point, and the gist of their argument against what Wayne Grudem said about Donald Trump or voting for Trump is that, as I've read through them, the gist of it is that Donald Trump is a really bad guy. You know, that he's a wicked man and so forth. And therefore, you know, how could Wayne Grudem make these types of statements? The problem with that argument is Wayne Grudem admits that in his article. He doesn't some say he glosses over it a little bit, but he doesn't gloss over it in the article. He acknowledges that. And then from there, though, builds his case. I thought it was one of the best defenses for voting for Donald Trump that I've seen thus far. You know, I've heard other people give various reasons, but I thought that his, the way he articulated it here in this lengthy article was well done, that he's thinking through this issue. And as he is thinking through it, he's applying the scriptures along the way as he goes through. And I think that he did a great job on contributing to this part of the discussion as people are going through this. I was going to leave most of my comments for the end, but let me just make a couple right now. You know, I think that the way the dialogue is going currently among Christians, where there are some people with this scorched earth policy on the as part of this discussion. In other words, what I mean by that is that, you know, if you vote for Donald Trump, you know, you're making a pact with the devil or something, and that your salvation is in question, you know, as to whether or not you really love the Lord Jesus Christ and these types of things. I think that that is way over the top, and it's not helping at all, to tell you the truth. I find real born-again believers that are wrestling with this issue. They're trying to think through it and think biblically about what they should do. They love their beloved country. They love the fact that God has richly blessed this country and enabled this country to train missionaries and to send Bibles out and to help people across the globe and so forth in so many different ways. Tremendous, unsurpassed blessings upon the nation down through the years. And they don't want to see their nation, they don't want to see it just fall into the hands of the progressives. And they see where the progressive message of the Democratic Party has taken it thus far, and they are genuinely concerned, and they feel that the country is at a tipping point, that it, although it's said very often and very in other elections as well, they really feel it's the case with this one because of the immigration policy and because of so many things have happened under the current administration with Barack Obama, that this particular election is going to really, could really seal the fate of the United States of America, at least for decades to come, that type of thing. And so they're genuinely concerned about their country. They're not glossing over the wickedness that's associated with the two candidates. That's not it at all. They're just trying to see what they should do. They find not voting not to be an option. You know, they feel that it's their responsibility to vote, and so they want to vote. They haven't found a third party candidate that they either like or feel is a legitimate candidate for the president of the United States. They often conclude that casting a vote for a third party is throwing their vote away. They feel that way about it. So they're looking at the facts, and they've ascertained that the fact is this. One of these two people is going to be in the White House. They're going to win the White House in November and January. They're going to be in the White House. It's either going to be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And when faced with that choice, many people are then saying, as wicked as Donald Trump is, and that's a given, so don't call and tell me about some more aspect of his wickedness. It's a given. But as wicked as Donald Trump is, he is still better than Hillary Clinton, and they feel that he would be better for the nation. And I don't think that, you know, just people thinking through that and coming to that conclusion, I don't fault them for that. I don't condemn them for that way of thinking. I don't think that they're part of a Trump cult because they do that. They don't like Donald Trump. They don't like what he's done. They don't like what he says a lot of times. But nevertheless, they still feel that he is the better of those two choices. That they're frustrated that they're left with only those two choices. They don't like it. But even though they don't like it, they feel that for their country, that this would be best. That seems to be what Grudem is articulating, and who his main audience that is receptive to what he writes here is, and what he is saying in this article. And I think that he has articulated that pretty well. Let me read through some of it so you can hear it in his own words, and then you can judge for yourself as to what he says here. You know, by the way, you can't judge for yourself. Despite what other people are saying, that, you know, yeah, you have the liberty to vote for whoever you want to vote for, but if you do, brother, you're no longer a friend of mine, or, you know, you've made a pact with the devil. No, you can judge for yourself. Look at what the facts are, and then, vote the one that you feel is, Ted Cruz said, and I like Ted Cruz's comments there at the convention. I thought it was right on. But vote your conscience. Your conscience has to include, you know, what is good for the nation, right? And if you do that, then I think you come to the right choice. Here's what Wayne Grudem says. He says, some of my friends tell me that they can't, in good conscience, vote for Donald Trump when faced with a choice between the lesser of two evils. The morally right thing is to choose neither one. They recommend voting for a third party or a write-in candidate. As a professor who has taught Christian ethics for 39 years, I think their analysis is incorrect. Now that Donald Trump has won the GOP nomination, I think voting for Trump is a morally good choice. American citizens need patience with each other in a difficult political season. Close friends are inevitably going to make different decisions about the election. We still need to respect each other and thank God that we live in a democracy with freedom to differ about politics. And we need to keep talking with each other because democracies function best when thoughtful citizens can calmly and patiently dialogue about the reasons for their differences. This is my contribution to that discussion. A good candidate with flaws is the heading that's over the next section. And he says this, I do not think that voting for Donald Trump is a morally evil choice because there is nothing morally wrong with voting for a flawed candidate if you think he will do more good for the nation than his opponent. In fact, it is the morally right thing to do. I did not support Trump in the primary season. I even spoke against him at a pastor's conference in February, but now I plan to vote for him. I do not think it's right to call him an evil candidate. I think rather he is a good candidate with flaws. He is egotistical, bombastic, and brash. He often lacks nuance in his statements. Sometimes he blurts out mistaken ideas, such as bombing the families of terrorists, that he later must abandon. He insults people. He can be vindictive when people attack him. He has been slow to disown and to rebuke the wrongful words and actions of some angry fringe supporters. He's been married 3 times and claims to have been unfaithful in his marriages. These are certainly flaws, but I don't think that they are disqualifying flaws in this election. On the other hand, I think some of the accusations hurled against him are unjustified. His many years of business conduct show that he is not a racist or anti-legal immigration or anti-Semitic or misogynistic. I think these are just magnifications by a hostile press exaggerating some careless statements that he has made. I think he is deeply patriotic and sincerely wants the best for the country. He has been an unusually successful problem solver in business. He has raised remarkable children, many whom have known him personally, speak highly of his kindness, his thoughtfulness, and his generosity. But the main reason I call him a good candidate with flaws is that I think most of his policies he supports are those that will do the most good for the nation. Seek the good of the nation. That's the heading under the next section in his article. Should Christians even try to influence elections at all? Yes, definitely. The Apostle Paul says that Christians are exiles on the earth, 1 Peter 1:1. Therefore, I take seriously the prophet Jeremiah's exhortation to the Jewish people living in the exile in Babylon, quote, seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare, Jeremiah chapter 29 and verse 7. By way of application, I think Christians today have a similar obligation to vote in such a way that will seek the welfare of the United States. Therefore, the one overriding question to ask is this: which vote is most likely to bring the best results for the nation? If this election is close, which it seems likely, if someone votes for a write-in candidate instead of voting for Trump, this action will directly help Hillary Clinton because she will need one less vote to win. Therefore, the question that Christians should ask is this: can I in good conscience act in a way that helps a liberal like Hillary Clinton win the presidency? Under Barack Obama, the federal government has seized more and more control over our lives. But this can change. This year, we have an unusual opportunity to defeat Hillary Clinton and the pro-abortion, pro-gender confusion, anti-religious liberty, tax and spend, big government liberalism that she champions. I believe defeating that kind of liberalism would be morally right action. Therefore, I feel the force of the words of James, who wrote, "Whosoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, to him it is sin." James 4:17. Some may feel it is easier just to stay away from this messy Trump-Clinton election and perhaps not even vote. But the teachings of Scripture do not allow us to escape moral responsibility by saying that we decided to do nothing. The prophet Obadiah rebuked the people of Eden for standing by and doing nothing to help when the Babylonians conquered Jerusalem. Quote, "On the day that you stood aloof, on the day that foreigners entered the gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were like one of them," unquote, Obadiah 1:1. I am writing this article because I doubt that many "I can't vote for Trump" Christians have understood what an entirely different nation would result from Hillary Clinton as president, or have analyzed in detail how different a Trump presidency would be. In what follows, I compare the results we could expect from a Clinton presidency with what we could expect from a Trump presidency. The Supreme Court with Clinton as president. Hillary Clinton would quickly replace Justice Scalia with another liberal like Breyer or Ginsburg, Sotomayor, or Kagan. This would give liberals a 5-4 majority on the Supreme Court, even without Justice Kennedy, and 6-3 when he votes with them. But that's not all. Justice Ginsburg is 83, and she has colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, and a heart stent. Justice Kennedy is 80. Justice Breyer is 78. A President Clinton could possibly nominate 3 or 4 justices to the Supreme Court, locking in a far-left activist judiciary for perhaps 30 years or more. She could also add dozens of activist judges to federal district courts and courts of appeals. The courts where 99% of the federal lawsuits are decided. Judicial tyranny of the type that we have seen when abortion rights and same-sex marriage were forced upon the nation would gain a permanent triumph. The nation would no longer be ruled by people and their elected representatives, but by unelected, unaccountable activist judges who would dictate from the bench about whatever they were pleased to decree. And there would be nothing in our system of government that anyone could do to stop them. That is why this election is not just about Hillary Clinton. It's about defeating the far less liberal agenda that any Democratic nominee would champion. Liberal Democrats are now within one Supreme Court justice of their highest goal, gaining permanent control of the nation with a 5-vote majority on the Supreme Court, and then relentlessly imposing every liberal policy on the nation, not through winning elections, but through a relentless parade of one Supreme Court decision after another. Even if Clinton were to drop out of the race, perhaps due to additional shocking email disclosures, for example, our choice in the election would be the same, because any other Democratic nominee would appoint the same kind of liberal justices to the court. On the issue of abortion. On abortion, the liberal court would probably find the ban on partial birth abortion to be unconstitutional. It was upheld only by a 5-4 majority in the Gonzalez versus Carhart in 2007. In addition, the court could find an absolute right on abortion in the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution and then sweep away with one decision most of all the restrictions on abortion that pro-life advocates have worked tirelessly for the past 43 years, including ultrasound requirements, waiting periods, parental consent requirements, and the prohibition on non-doctors performing abortions. Voters should not doubt the power of the Supreme Court to abolish all of these laws restricting abortions. Think about the power of the Obergefell versus Hodges 5-4 decision in June of 2015. It instantly nullified all of the work that thousands of Christians had done over the many years in persuading the citizens of 31 states to pass constitutional amendments defining marriage as a union between one man and one woman. But no one is campaigning for such laws or amendments anymore because it would be futile. The Supreme Court has spoken, and therefore the issue is settled in the political system of the United States. We lost, not at the ballot box, but because we had a liberal Supreme Court that nullified the democratic process regarding the definition of marriage. So it would certainly be with any efforts to place legal limitations on abortions. Nobody would campaign anymore for laws to limit abortions because any such laws would be unconstitutional. The legislative lobbying work of the pro-life advocacy groups would be totally and utterly defeated. Millions of unborn children would continue to die. How about on the issue of religious liberty? The current liberal agenda often includes suppressing Clinton's oppositions to its views. So the liberal court would increasingly nullify rights of conscience with respect to forced participation in same-sex marriage ceremonies or expressing moral objections to homosexual conduct. Already, Christians have been pushed out of many occupations. Florists, bakers, professional photographers have had their businesses destroyed by large fines for refusal to contribute to artistic talents for a specific event, a same-sex marriage ceremony to which they had moral objections. Fire Chief Calvin Cochran of Atlanta was removed from his job because of self-publishing a religious book that briefly mentioned the Bible's teaching regarding non-marital sexual conduct, including homosexuality, amidst a host of other topics. His situation holds ominous implications for any Christian who holds public sector jobs. In our military services, many high-ranking officers have quietly been forced to resign because they were unwilling to give support to the homosexual agenda. Mozilla Foxfire CEO Brandon Ike was pushed out of his own company merely because he had donated money to Proposition 8 in California, supporting marriage between one man and one woman. This event has troubling implications for Christians in corporate executive role who dare to support a political position contrary to the liberal agenda. Last year, Boston urologist Paul Church, a Harvard Medical School faculty member, lost his hospital privileges at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center because he had expressed concerns about the medical dangers associated with same-sex activity. Are my predictions about this kind of loss of religious liberty too grim? The three conservative justices on the Supreme Court expressed similar concerns just last month. The case concerned the Washington pharmacy that had been owned for 70 years by the Stormans family, who are committed Christians. They will likely now be put out of business by the Washington State Pharmacy Board for refusing to dispense an abortion-causing prescription drug on June 28, 2016. The Supreme Court refused to hear the Stormans' appeal in spite of the strong dissent written by Justice Alito, joined by Roberts and Thomas. Quote, "At issue are Washington State's regulations that are likely to make a pharmacist unemployable if he or she objects to on religious grounds to dispensing certain types of prescription medications. There is much evidence that the impetus for the adoption of the regulations was hostility to pharmacists whose religious beliefs regarding abortion and contraception are out of step with the prevailing opinion in the state. If this is a sign of how religious liberties will be treated in the years ahead, those who value religious freedom have cause for great concern. That was written by the justices. Christian business owners, if Clinton appoints just one more liberal justice, it is likely that many Christian business owners will be targeted. Hobby Lobby won its 2014 Supreme Court case, again, 5-4, so it was not compelled to dispense abortifacients to its employees, but that case could be reversed. The four liberal justices in the minority, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, are still on the court. If that case is overturned, it would force Hobby Lobby out of business because the Green family has said that they would shut down the company of 23,000 employees and over $3 billion in annual sales if they lost the decision. The implications for other Christian business owners with pro-life convictions are ominous. These incidents show that it's not an exaggeration to say that under the liberal Supreme Court resulting from Hillary Clinton's election, Christians could increasingly experience systematic exclusion from hundreds of occupations and thousands of people losing their jobs. Step by step, Christians would increasingly be marginalized to the silent fringes of society. Is withholding a vote from Donald Trump important enough to pay this high of a price for the loss of freedom? Some Christians have even hinted to me that, quote, persecution would be good for us, unquote. But the Bible never encourages us to seek persecution or to hope for it. We should rather work to prevent such oppressions of Christians, just as Jesus taught us to pray, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil, Matthew chapter 6 and in verse 13. Paul did not encourage us to pray that God would give us bad rulers, but good ones who would allow us to live a peaceful life. Quote, I urge that supplication and prayers and intercessions and thanksgivings be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way, unquote, from 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 1. Christian schools and colleges, a liberal Supreme Court would also impact education. Christian colleges would likely be found guilty of discrimination if they required adherence to the biblical standards regarding sexual conduct or even required affirmation of primary Christian belief. Campus ministries like CRU and InterVarsity have already been forced off many university campuses following a 5-4 Supreme Court decision in CLS versus Martinez in 2010, which upheld the exclusion of the Christian Legal Society from the campus of Hastings College of Law in San Francisco. And now, California's Equality in Higher Education Act, SB 1146, which recently passed the California State Senate and will likely become law, would prohibit Christian colleges from requiring students or employees to hold Christian beliefs or abide by biblical moral standards regarding sexual conduct, and would prohibit colleges from assigning housing based on a student's biological sex if a student claimed to be transgender. Colleges like Biola and Azusa Pacific could not long survive under those regulations. With regard to the elementary schools and high schools, laws promoting school choice or tuition voucher programs would likely be declared unconstitutional if they allowed such funding to go to Christian schools. A tax credit program for scholarship to private schools, including Christian institution, was only upheld by a 5-4 Supreme Court decision in Arizona Christian School Tuition Organization versus Wynn in 2011. And all four liberal justices who voted against it are still on the court. Another possible target of the liberal agenda would be laws that allow for homeschooling. If the secular liberal government governmental hostility to homeschooling in Europe, European countries is any indicator. Churches could not be exempt from the impact of the liberal Supreme Court. The court could rule that any school district is allowed to ban churches from renting school buildings on Sunday, an action that could severely hinder the work of small churches and church planning in general. This was already the ruling of the Second Circuit in the Bronx Household of Faith case regarding New York City public schools. And some churches in Iowa have now been told that they have to make their bathrooms open to people on the basis of their gender identity if the churches are going to be open to the public at all. Freedom of speech. Freedom of speech would be increasingly restricted in the public square. In 2014, the Supreme Court ruled that prayers of visiting pastors who prayed, quote, in Jesus' name, unquote, when they opened a city council meeting, the city council meeting were allowed under the Constitution. But again, it was a 5-4 decision. That was in the town of Greece versus Galloway. And all four liberal judges who wanted to restrict such prayers are still on the court. Criminalizing dissent. Another troubling possibility is that liberal activists, once in power, would further entrench themselves by criminalizing much political dissent. We have already seen it happen with the IRS targeting the conservative groups, with some state attorneys taking steps to prosecute groups who dare to disagree with activist claims about the danger of man-made global warming. Quote, but my conscience won't let me vote for Donald Trump, unquote, some have told me. But I wonder if their consciences have considered the gravity of these destructive consequences that would come from a Clinton presidency. A vote for Trump would at least do something to prevent these things. In addition, I think there are several positive reasons to vote for Donald Trump. Let's take a very quick commercial break, and when we come back from the break, I'll read the rest of his article, where Wayne Grudem then turns a page here. He looked at what what is likely to happen under the Clinton administration, based upon some of the precedent that has already been set by a liberal Supreme Court and other decisions that have been made. On the second half, then, when we come back from the break, we'll look at what would things likely look like under a Trump presidency. That's what he writes about next in this article.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Okay, I've been reading through a rather lengthy article that's been written by theologian and author Wayne Grudem. And it really rocked the evangelical world this past week when he wrote it because the title of the article says it all. Let me just read that again. It's Why Voting for Donald Trump is a Morally Good Choice. In the article, he then lays out what a presidency would look like under Hillary Clinton based upon precedent that has been set by previous progressives and current progressives and so forth, what the liberal judges have already done and what most likely they would consider to do or continue to do under a Clinton presidency, and just how the loss of religious liberty and how abortion would flourish even greater under a Clinton presidency and so forth. So he's laid out the case in that first half of the article, and I want to read the second half of the article now, which basically talks about what would a Trump presidency likely look like. Now, we don't have as much precedent here to look at. We do have statements that Trump has made and so forth to consider, but we don't have as much to go on. But he still makes some likelihood of what the Trump presidency would look like. The Supreme Court, with Trump as president, Trump has released a list of 11 judges to show the kind of nominee he would appoint to the Supreme Court. A lawyer familiar with many of the names has told me that they constitute a, quote, dream list, unquote, of outstanding judges who would uphold the original meaning of the Constitution and would not create new laws from the bench. Trump has said he would rely primarily on advice from the Federalist Society, an organization that promotes the original meaning, quote, unquote, view so strongly exemplified by Justice Scalia before his death. If Trump would avoid appoint a replacement for Scalia from the list of 11 and probably one or two other Supreme Court justices, then we could see a 5-4 and even 6-3 majority of conservative justices on the Supreme Court. The result for the nation would be overwhelmingly good. Such a Supreme Court would finally return control to the nation, of the nation, to the people and their elective representatives, removing it from the dictatorial judges who repeatedly make law from the bench. Abortion. Such a court would likely overturn Roe v. Wade, and return abortion laws and the regulation of abortion to the states. Religious liberty. A conservative court would vigorously uphold the First Amendment, protecting freedom of religion and freedom of speech for Christian colleges, Christian ministries, and churches. Such a court would likely overturn the horribly destructive decision in Lemon versus Kurtzman in 1971 that changed the meaning of the First Amendment and ruled that a government action, quote, must not have the primary effect of either advancing or inhibiting religion, unquote. Note the specific denomination, note not a specific denomination, but religion in general. A conservative court would likely declare the First Amendment was not intended to prohibit the establishment of a state-sponsored church or denomination. Such a decision would once again allow the non-sectarian affirmation of personal belief in God in the public school, would once again allow coaches to pray for their football teams before a game. It would allow visiting clergy to be invited to give a prayer at a high school graduation ceremonies. It would imply that and nativity scenes without Santa Claus or Buddha should be allowed in government-owned parks and buildings at Christmas time. It would require these things. It would allow them and local officials to choose to approve them. It would restore true freedom of religion as the First Amendment intended it to be. It would also protect freedom of conscience for Christians who object to participating in abortions or dispensing abortifacients or facients medicines, or who do not wish to participate in same-sex wedding ceremonies. It is also possible that the conservative Supreme Court would eventually return control of marriage to the states. We'll get the gun control. Freedom of Christian influence in politics. Significantly, Trump has pledged to work to repeal the 1954 Johnson Amendment to the IRS Code, which has been used for 62 years as a threat to silence pastors from speaking about political issues for fear of losing their tax-exempt status. This would be a great victory for freedom of religion and freedom of speech. In short, a Trump-appointed Supreme Court, together with dozens of lower court judges appointed by him, would probably result in significant advances in many of the policy areas important to Christians. It would also open the door to huge expansions of influence for the many Christian lobbying groups known as family policy councils in the various states, especially enabling them to work for further legal protection for life, for marriage and family, and for religious liberty. But how can we know that Donald Trump won't change his mind? Quote, "But Trump has changed his mind in the past," unquote, a politically minded friend said to me. Quote, "How do you know that he won't, that he will do what he has promised? Maybe he'll just betray you and appoint a liberal Supreme Court justice," unquote. My reply is that we can never know the future conduct of any human being with 100% certainty, but in making an ethical decision like this one, we should base the decision on the most likely results. In this case, the most likely result is that Trump will do most or all of what he has said. In the history of American politics, candidates who have been elected president have occasionally changed their minds on one or another issue while in office, but no president has ever gone back on most of what he has promised to do, especially on issues that are crucially important in the election. In this election, it is reasonable to think that the most likely result is that both Trump and Clinton will do what they have promised to do. That is the basis on which we should decide how to vote. And notice how Trump has changed his mind. He continues to move in a more conservative direction, as evidenced by his list of judges and his choice for vice president. Just as he succeeded in business by listening to the best experts to solve each problem, I suspect that he has been learning from the best experts in conservative political thought and has increasingly found that conservative solutions really work. We should applaud these changes. His choice of Indiana Governor Mike Pence as a vice presidential running mate is an especially significant indication that he will govern as a conservative. Trump could have picked a moderate, but instead picked a lifelong solid conservative who is a thoughtful, gracious policy wizard. Pence is a lawyer and former talk radio host who served 12 years in Congress and has significant congressional leadership positions, so he will be immensely helpful in working with Congress. He is a committed evangelical Christian. He is a former board member of the Indiana Family Institute, a conservative Christian lobbying group in Indiana. However, the Supreme Court is not the only issue at stake in this election. While I disagree with Trump on a few things, especially trade policy, on most important issue, Trump is likely to do good for the nation. Taxes and jobs. Trump has pledged to cut taxes significantly, while Clinton wants to raise them. Trump is advocating a 15% tax rate for corporations rather than the current 35%. Lower corporate taxes will lead to business expansion and a massive increase in available jobs and higher paying levels. For individual taxpayers, Trump favors a top rate of 25%, but for Clinton, it's 45%. Most small businesses file under the individual rate. So once again, Trump's lower tax rate would result in substantial expansion of businesses and many more jobs. Finally, our economy would snap out of its eight-year and anemic growth. In my judgment, Christians should support lower tax rates that would lead to more jobs because Obama's economic policies for the last 8 years have hurt lower-income and middle-income families the most. Many can't even find jobs, and others can't find full-time jobs. Those that have jobs struggle to survive with no meaningful pay raises year after year. It is no surprise that these people who are supporting Trump in overwhelming numbers. Tax rates are of a good indicator of a governmental control. Higher tax rates mean greater governmental control in our lives, while lower tax rates indicate greater freedoms. Minorities. two of the deepest causes of poverty among minority groups and racial tensions in our country are failing public schools in our inner cities and a lack of available jobs. Trump expressed a commitment to solve these problems at several points in his acceptance speech at the Republican convention. He pledged to reduce taxes and regulations leading to many more jobs, and he said, quote, nearly 4 in 10 African-American children are living in poverty, while 58% of African-American youth are not employed. This administration has failed America's inner cities. It's failed them on education. It's failed on jobs. It's failed them on crime. Every action I take, I will ask myself, does this make better for America, for young Americans in Baltimore, Chicago, Detroit, Ferguson, who have much as much of a right to live out their dreams as any other child in America? We will rescue children from failing schools by helping their parents send them to safe schools of their choice, unquote. By contrast, Clinton will bow to the teachers' unions and oppose school choice at every turn. She will continue to strangle businesses with high taxes and regulations preventing job growth. The military. Trump has promised to rapidly rebuild our depleting military forces, but Clinton would continue the liberal policy of eviscerating them through denying funding. This is dangerous in light of increasing threats from China and Russia, Iran, and ISIS. The borders. Trump has repeatedly promised that he will finally secure our borders, an urgent need to protect the nation from ever more increasing threat of terrorists and drug smugglers. Clinton will not do this, but will continue to allow what she thinks to be thousands of future Democratic voters. ISIS and terrorism. Trump has pledged to aggressively attack and utterly defeat ISIS. Clinton will continue the anemic Obama policy of periodic bombing runs and drone attacks under which ISIS has continued to thrive. China and Russia. Trump will not let China and Russia and Iran push us around anymore, as Obama has done. I'm going to skip a little bit because of time. Israel. Trump has promised to vigorously defend and support Israel. Energy. Trump has said he will approve the Keystone oil pipeline and grant more drilling permits, leading to lower energy costs. Executive orders and bathrooms. Trump has promised to rescind many of the most objectionable executive orders by President Obama. So he will likely end the compulsory moral degradation forced on us by the liberal agenda. Health care. Trump wants to repeal health care. And so on. And that, so he goes on more and more in the text to talk about these things. Does character matter, he says at the end? Some might ask. I believe that character does matter. But I think Trump's character is far better than what is portrayed by much current political mudslinging, and far better than his opponent's character. In addition, if someone makes doubts about character the only factor to consider, that is a fallacy in ethical reasoning that I call reductionism. The mistake of reducing every argument to only one factor when the situation requires that multiple factors be considered. In this election, an even larger factor is the future of the nation that would flow from the Clinton or a Trump presidency. To my friends who tell me that they won't vote for Trump because there is a chance he won't govern at all like he promises, I reply that all American presidential history shows that that result is unlikely, and it is ethically fallacious reasoning to base a decision on assuming a result that is unlikely to happen. Consider instead the most likely results. The most likely result of voting for Trump is that he will govern in a way he promises to do, bringing much good to the nation. But most likely result of not voting for Trump is that you will be abandoning thousands of unborn babies who will be put to death under Hillary Clinton's Supreme Court, thousands of Christians who will be excluded from their lifelong occupations, thousands of poor who will never again be able to find high-paying jobs in an economy crushed by a government hostility towards business, thousands of inner-city children who will never be able to get a good education, thousands of sick and elderly who will never get adequate medical treatment when the government is the nation's only health care provider, thousands of people who will be killed by an unchecked ISIS, and millions of Jews in Israel who will find themselves alone and surrounded by hostile enemies. And you will be contributing to a permanent loss of the American system of government due to a final victory of unaccountable judicial tyranny. When I look at it this way, my conscience and my considered moral judgment tell me that I must vote for Donald Trump as the candidate who is most likely to do the most good for the United States of America. That was an article, again, that was written by Wayne Grudem. Dr. Grudem is a theologian. He's written his own systematic theology that is used by many, many Christian churches and schools and seminaries and so forth. And he's written what I think is a very thoughtful argument and really laid out the case of what would take place. And I think that at the very least, it should be something that Christians should really consider as they think about this current election, rather than just, making, broad statements that don't consider all the arguments. I think this one does in a much better way. Remember this. The Lord Jesus Christ said, He said, you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. I'll see you next time, right here on Knowing the Truth.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.